this is one of those mornings where I feel like we could just go home and just sit with what we've had so far. We're just getting started. I'm not normally nervous. I don't think I'm nervous as much as just feeling the anticipation of the season this morning. Try to listen to my body. My body does some strange response things in that, like just during that meditation, my heart rate was abnormally high according to my Garmin watch. That's why it was beeping at me. I'm feeling so full with gratitude at the community that selfishly that my wife and I get to be a part of with you, because we've longed for community, and we know what it's like to be outside of community and be outside of relationship, and we know what it's like to be in rooms with people who use language that you don't use anymore and celebrate holidays in a way that you don't normally celebrate. I've gotten texts about such anticipation for the season of celebrating our Savior's birth. And like I said, if anybody's read the emails I've been sending out, I'm kind of on a break from Christmas right now. I'm seeing other holidays. Solstice has been really good for me this year. We put more time and intention into solstice and the celebration of that. And then I'm not downplaying Christmas, right? Because, you know, we have some friends and we got to see our niece and nephews open gifts, and with just such an appropriate amount of that celebratory atmosphere that kids have when they open new gifts. And it was a cool gift set. I mean, it was a chess set, Lord of the Rings chess set with these beautifully sculpted pieces there. And we had a whole Lord of the Rings thing this Christmas. My mom apparently had never watched the whole movie set, and as grandkids will do, they encouraged her to start. And so she watched the first two with them, and then I got to watch Return of the King with her. Which is why during there, maybe that's why I'm blaming it. From the side, Spencer, like, or more from the back, you've got like a Frodo vibe, right? That's, and I mean that as the sincerest of compliment. Like, you could just put on those little hobbit ears and you'd be all set. But it's been such a wonderful, wonderful gift. And we're talking about in this series, The Wisdom of Winter. We're trying to be open to what's being birthed. And the title for this morning is called The Seed Beneath the Snow, which would have been a better title had we had snow instead of this kind of a rainy, foggy morning that we have here in West Michigan. West Michigan is insane for its this and that, right? Like, I did a cold plunge this week where there was snow on the shore when we did it, and then now it's like rainy and foggy. So we're talking about being open, right, to what's being birthed, what's happening. Got in the car this morning and foggy, and I thought, this is a perfect synthwave drive. Anybody who is familiar with that genre knows what I'm talking about. The foggy headlamp or the lights over the road as you're driving, and then that driving beats, and instantly, through the power of music, through the power of intention, something that was gloomy and dark and dreary becomes invigorating, exciting, anticipatory. What's coming next? The seed beneath the snow. That's what we're talking about. So I want to start with this quote from Carl Jung. That's one of his most misquoted lines, and I'm kind of a stickler for, if I try to use a quote, I really want to know the context, the meaning. It's easy to do quote mining today as speakers and authors. So many people say so many brilliant things, but what does that mean? So the quote, as is most often attributed to him, is that last line, "Who looks outside dreams? Who looks inside awakens." And in proper fortune cookie fashion, it can kind of mean anything, right? If you got that as your fortune cookie, what does that even mean? It's from a letter exchange that Young had in 1916 as a response to Fanny Bowditch. And she was struggling with some depression, with a lot of big things in her life. And Young agreed to take her on as a patient after returning from his war service. And Young wrote the above full statement as more of a prescription for her to intentionally lean into some times of solitude and introspection. And it's in their bulletin printout. You can read that along with me. The full quote is from this excerpt in this letter to Fanny, and he says, "I realize that under the circumstances you have described, that you feel the need to see clearly. Like many of us, she's seeking direction for her life. She was at a time and season of her life where, like many of us, we're wondering, what comes next? Where do I go from here? And he says, you want to see clearly, but your vision will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Your vision, he wrote, can be clear only when you look within your own heart. Outside of you, he says, everything seems discordant. Only within does it coalesce into unity. And then that line, who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakens. Young wrote in a letter to Gustav Schmaltz in 1957 about his thoughts on solitude and space and creating times for you to reflect and look inward. Young, like many of his peers, understood that things that needed to be birthed and things that needed to change and transform can only come out of carving out space for you to listen, for you to look, to reflect. It's kind of naturally what happens at this time of year, isn't it? That's the wisdom that winter offers us. That there are things happening beneath the surface. Things are germinating. And we have to give them space. We have to create that fertile soil out of which can be birthed new things. Young wrote to Schmaltz, he said, "Solitude is for me a fount of healing, which itself makes my life worth living. The journey is a great adventure in itself, but not one that can be talked about at great length." He says, in excess of words and outside of advice, it's helpful. And that's why sometimes as a speaker, as a teacher, when I come in here, I feel so incredibly inadequate, because what most of us probably need is not more words, not more things to do. But I guarantee you, if you could carve out 20, 30 minutes of sacred, holy space to look within, to listen to nature, to your soul, to all things around you, you will get more out of that practice if you can do that consistently than the best communicators. Because at a certain point, words begin to fail us. That's why so many mystics use words like ineffable, which is one of my favorite words, because it's a word that literally means that you don't have words to describe something. And we've come up a word for that. Ineffable. Our connection to all things, when we really try to talk about it, many mystics and authors and poets and artists get to the point where they say, I have lost the ability to use language to describe it. And I would dare say that some of the most transformative things that are being birthed in your life, you may not even have words for now, maybe not ever, and that's okay. Sometimes we need sacred practices like singing, like we did with Spencer this morning. I am home. What a sacred and holy practice. And I understand that for somebody like me who is fully deconstructing and reconstructing, that complicated holidays like Christmas are kind of weird that way. And yet I still find myself using language like sacred and holy to describe things that are becoming more profound to me than anything that words could use. To go for a walk in nature, to climb a tree and hug it, which I did this week on a nice walk in the park. My wife was so graciously patient with me as she was standing down there. As a matter of fact, the picture I love is she took a picture of me from up in the tree. We were in Riley Trails, and then I took a picture of her down there, and you have to zoom way into the air, and like the look of just amusement slash insanity that she saw reflected is just like, why does he do that? But I find those kind of moments more sacred, more holy. The moments spent in connection with someone you love is precious. It's holy. So what I'm inviting you to do is to come back to yourself, to look within for this season. An awakened self requires solitary inward reflection. It requires us looking inside and giving space to discover what's there and what's being birthed. So I'm going to give you some practices in this week's email to help for those of you who want something to kind of like hang your hat on. Sometimes it's easier when you're trying to allow new things to be birthed to kind of create that framework, that container for it. When you go to a yoga studio and you're about to begin a practice, you leave your shoes there, you get your mat out, you prepare your space. And that preparation is as important to the practice as the practice itself. Because anybody who's ever, like me, quite frankly, come into a yoga class like 5 minutes late and you're rushing to get there and you're like the least zen and centered you were in the previous 15 minutes before you got there, and then you have to kind of, and then just breathe and center, right? I want to invite us to give space and to give room for things to be birthed. So I'll give some intentional steps in this next email with some ways that you can set not resolutions but intentions for the year, which you could think of this way, that an intention is kind of like a compass and a resolution is like a map. They both have value, but one tells you where to go while the other one tells you where you are at. It's okay to have both. It's okay to have direction, to know that we're going places. I want to do things. I want to start new things. I want to allow these things to be birthed. But more important than those things that you do is who you are and what you're becoming. And an intention invites you to create a fertile, open space, an open container to say to God, the universe, whatever, to say what is going to be birthed, I'm open to it, I'm willing to receive. Wayne in our pre-talk this morning so perfectly described it in that like Wendell Berry fashion, that curiosity that comes, that he's bringing to the new year, he said. He's like, I'm curious to see what's going to happen. I have this anticipation. And that's what we're asking to be birthed within us. We don't have to dread. We can enter the year with hope because we're constantly growing. We're constantly changing. And I want to close with this thought by Rumi. And we've had such a wonderful morning, so many great meditations. I feel like this last couple of weeks, like we've just been receiving gift after gift after gift. And it's a lot because, like, I have to think as a communicator, how am I going to even follow that? That amazing meditation, these great songs. But I've got Rumi. Rumi can speak to the depths of my being sometimes. And I wish I could say that I wrote it, but when he writes it, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I felt that I wanted to say. Rumi was a mystic who began his life as a rule follower, trying to go through the ins and outs of ordinary religion. He was a regular scholar who didn't lead that extraordinary of a life prior to these transformative experiences that he began to have. As he began to encounter the mystical, the unknown, it birthed new things in him, and then he became a fount of wisdom as he wrote this poetry, this lyrical beauty that came from the depths of a culture that we've received so much from, but we don't spend a lot of time looking at. And Rumi says, probably better than I wish I could say it, this is what I would say that we're preparing ourselves for in the season. This is the encapsulation of that seed that is dormant below the surface of the ground. Rumi says, let yourself be silently drawn by the strange pull of what you really love. It will not lead you astray. In the silence, there is sacred mystery, a path that shows the way, not with words, but with the heart's yearning. And if that sounds a little bit romantic and woo-woo, it is. And it's beautiful because we're so conditioned, or I can speak for myself, it's been so conditioned into so many of us to not trust the wisdom that is within, to doubt our inner light and direction, to second guess ourselves, to question, to berate ourselves. We are so harsh of a critic in this inner monologue that we have. We're so often able to extend so much more grace and patience to others than we are to ourselves. So I want to challenge you with Rumi's words. I want to invite you to open yourself up and to allow silence to be this fertile ground for you to see what is being born. There may be some words and some things that you can use throughout the year to kind of hang your intention on, this compass of direction. But before we get to the practical parts, before we get to all of that changing part, this season is asking us to see what is being birthed now. To look within, to allow what your heart is being drawn to guide. Let yourself be silently drawn by the strange pull of what you really love. It will not lead you astray. So, my question for you as we leave, as we kind of wrap up this calendar year. On the one hand, yes, as somebody said this morning, it's just another day. January 1st feels a whole lot like December 31st. It's a new year, and we will struggle to write 25 instead of 24 for a while, and then we'll adapt and we'll adjust, and for a while, we'll say 25 feels like such a futuristic year. Remember when we were kids, 2025, and before long, we'll just embrace it as the new normal. But nature is in this cycle of change and rebirth. And I've been trying to allow more space this year to take my cues, not from these external places of things that are being spoken, but as Jung said, to create space for the things that are happening within. Without He who looks without dreams. He who looks within awakens. As Ram Dass says, these external forms are lovely, but the real work is what happens in the deepest parts of our own heart. It's the hardest work. I can tell you it was a whole lot easier when I could rattle off the doctrines and theology and explanations of things that I believed. And yet it's a whole lot more freeing now because I have just as long of a list of things that I have no explanations for and I don't need them. I'm experiencing wonder and beauty in the universe now in such sacred and profound ways that I don't have to use religious language and I don't have to package it within a certain construct of man-made understanding. But I can tell you that the deepest and the truest parts of my being that are resonating with that. So that's the invitation this year. What is your heart's yearning? What is being birthed within you? And I hope that you take these questions with you, not just from this morning, but I hope that you spend some time, maybe even the next week or two, in some contemplation, maybe with a journal, a pen and paper, and to just quietly listen at what is being said. Listen to your heart's yearning and realize that it will not lead you astray, that you can follow your heart's longing and trust that inner light. Because as we end, or as I like to end my time with you, that word namaste, which gets so overused in yoga culture, I get that. But when I use that word, it's one of the most deeply sacred words for me. Because it says, that same inner light that I believe I can trust and listen to that is within me. And I, whatever that looks like, I don't know. Whether that's a soul or the mental construct of a soul that we have from our psyche trying to create an ego. I can go into both sides of the conversation, mystic or philosopher. But the point is this, there's a deeper way of knowing and a deeper truth and an inner light, and it's within me, and I believe it's also within you. And when I say namaste, it says that the light within me that I'm trying to listen to and trying to spend more time with is the same light that is within you, and that light within me bows to the light within you and acknowledges it as sacred. So may this season for you be sacred and holy, whatever it looks like and whatever your new year looks like in your celebrations. May something be birthed in you. May that seed beneath the snow slowly germinate. Namaste.